It brings out the flavor.
Every Wednesday here on Indy, it's the Johnny Athens Variety Hour.
Right here on this stage, it's probably the world's greatest concentration of sinners in any one spot.
You got to be good or bad is the devil.
Let's try it one more once.
Beautiful theme of every dream I ever knew. Down deep in my heart, I hear it play. I feel it start, then melt away. I hear music when I touch your hand, a beautiful melody from some enchanted land. Down deep in my heart, I hear it say, is this the day? I've heard this lovely strain. I alone have heard this glad refrain. Must it be forever inside of me? Why can't I let it go? Why can't I let you know? Why can't I let you know the song my heart would sing? That beautiful rhapsody of love and youth and spring. The music is sweet, the words are true, the song is you. Why can't I let you know the song my heart would sing? That beautiful rhapsody of love and youth and spring. The music is sweet, the words are true, the song is you.
Indy 115, this is the Johnny Athens Variety Hour. Thank you so much for tuning in today. It is a pleasure to be here and to be back, as always, on the station and spend some time with you, introducing you to some great new Canadian music. We've got interviews, we've got comedy, we have just so much for you here on the show. It's a lot of fun to be back. And this week's episode is extra special because once again, we have another guest. Believe it or not, 3 weeks in a row. I know we haven't been on this great of a roll since I slipped down Mount Kid in Alberta last summer. So there you have it. But this week we have Chet Doxis. He's talking about his new album, Rich in Symbols, and it's great. It's a huge interview. I had so much fun talking with him. He is such a great guy, such a great conversationalist. He has phenomenal ideas and energy, and it's just phenomenal stuff. I wish him all the best, and I'm excited for you to listen, and we have him here to talk with us. And, of course, we have a lot of great new music as well, one being from a new artist I was not familiar with, and it's a great new album called Wildwood by the Harry Bartlett Trio. It is an exciting and a fresh new album that is exploring so many different avenues. The compositions on this album, Wildwood, were recorded all on Gambier Island in BC over a six-month period. So it was quick, it was fast, it was rugged, and it was isolated on the little island of Gambier in BC. The coast permeates into the songs, and so does that isolation, to create an incredible sound of reverence and peace that shines through. Harry Bartlett, that is, worked closely with Toronto-based guitarist and composer Jeff Young, who lent his wide-ranging experience and razor-sharp focus, of course, on this album as a wonderful artistic advisor. But it features the talents of Harry Bartlett on guitar, Caleb Klager on the bass and modular synthesizer, and Harry Vetro on the drum set. And the trio does phenomenal work. They actually debuted in 2018 with an EP, The Harry Bartlett Trio, and have since been performing extensively. I assume that's been curbed a little bit by the COVID pandemic, of course, who hasn't? But they actually were awarded the TD Niagara Jazz Festival Jazz for the Ages Award in 2020. So until, you know, the pandemic came along, they were doing hot. They were wonderful. And I'm glad to see that they're back in the game with the release of this new album, Wildwood. If you enjoy the album, you can check out his website, harrybartlettmusic.com, or his SoundCloud as well, for the song for Wildwood. So from this album, we will be playing Burgess Falls here on Indie 115.
Thank you.
Today on the Johnny Athens Variety Hour, we had the pleasure of talking with Chet Doxis and his new album release, Rich in Symbols 2, which is a sequel to Rich in Symbols almost 30 years ago now, I believe. And it's a very unique album. You may remember last week we chatted with Ernesto Cervini, and his album was inspired by a series of Canadian books. In this case, it's an album inspired by a series of Canadian paintings. And, well, I'll let the man speak for himself. myself, but it's a wonderful album, and it's got a wonderful history and story. You can find him at chetdoxas.com, chetdoxas.com, and the album is Rich in Symbols 2, where you can find in all your usual places, of course, Bandcamp especially. How is it there in Brooklyn?
As long as I pretend we're not living in the United States, everything's fine.
Very good. Of course. We're here to talk about, of course, Rich in Symbols 2, which has been out for about a month now, right? And why don't you tell us a little bit about how that project got started?
Sure. Well, it goes back about 8 years ago when I started writing music for paintings. During a time where I was actually struggling with my inner critic, and whenever I was writing something, I wasn't really having a good time. And writing music is really one of my favorite things to do. I spent about 7 years on the road with the Sam Roberts Band in Canada. And I had saxophone for a while in the group. And on our days off, sometimes we visit museums. One of the particular days in Buffalo, of all places, called the Albright Knot. It's a truly incredible collection. And I had a little moleskin book, and these come in all shapes and sizes and contents, and the particular one that I had actually had blank staff paper in it.
Okay.
So I would carry this around just to jot my ideas around. I grabbed this on my way off the tour bus that day, and I was walking around the museum, and sure enough, melodies and rhythms and sometimes just three prose started popping into my head, and I just started writing. And I wrote so many things that day, just little 3 or 4 bar sketches, and then actually a whole piece. And it kind of got me over the hump, and I stuck with it and did a first record, Rich in Symbols 1, which is dedicated to a collection of works between the mid-70s and mid-80s in New York. It's the most familiar names to some people would be Jean-Michel Basquiat, Keith Haring, Robert Longo, great photographer. Among others, so I wrote music for paintings and photographs that I would visit with. Kept going on the second volume here to feature Canadian works.
That's really interesting, because last week, actually, I was talking with Ernesto Cervini about his new album, Joy. And for that, he was inspired by literature, this series of books. So I thought it was really interesting. We asked him how he translates a book into music. So, and you kind of mentioned that how you were inspired by the paintings. Every song is based or inspired by some kind of painting. So
yeah,
when you're there looking at a piece of artwork, how is it that it turns into music? What is that process?
You know, I on purpose haven't kind of done too much scratching of the surface, because it's very instinctual. I look at it, and it's almost like turning on the radio to a channel in my head. So I just start writing. But through this process of doing interviews and maybe letting people know, like promoting the record, I've had to kind of reverse engineer this a little bit and dive a little bit deeper into what this process is. And I find myself maybe relating to, I guess, mood is the first thing that strikes me. But then I'll start to look at it like, oh, maybe not, because I'll hear a phrase that should be 4 bars. And it's 5.5 bars, so it's cropped, like on the piece Tree Trunk, which is based on an Emily Carr painting, which is in the Vancouver Art Gallery. And then that painting itself, if you see it online, is cropped, you know? So I'm like, oh, I'm sure I was seeing that picture is not finished. It's not a full tree that's painted. It's just a very cropped section of the tree trunk itself. So it's, I think it kind of winds its way in based on mood, form, obviously color has a lot to do with it. And then the piece North Shore Lake Superior, I feel like that painting is really interesting, because it's really iconic work in Canada. It's a dead tree trunk, you know, almost portrayed like a religious icon, like the Virgin Mary, as you see it. It's being hit by light
right
on one side and dark on the other. And he's given so much life to this dead thing. And that was really at the forefront of my mind, was playing with the idea of light and dark, or life and death, and trying to represent two realms at once. So it's a multi-dimensional answer to that question, which I actually still not ready to hang my hat really on any of those answers. So.
No, absolutely. And I actually kind of admire that you're really just creating this art. You know, you're not really concerned about, I guess, how it happens. It just does.
Very responsive in that way.
Exactly, because you're saying how, you know, the three bars, four bars, or the measures, what have you, based on what's going through your mind when you're looking at them. And is that kind of where this avant-garde, almost absurdist style with the music comes from? Because layer sounds that aren't music, you know, like you walking through dead leaves or something, leaves on the ground. Is that kind of like, was that in the painting as well?
Possibly. I mean, I feel like environmentally what I'm doing in other parts of my musical life are inevitably going to make their way into other projects that I'm working. So I work a lot with a co-producer down here on ambient and electronic music that I've noticed has been showing up in other parts of my work, especially when it's a studio project. So noise music and avant-garde music has always been something that I've loved starting playing. I mean, I always loved really obscure noise artists from people called now the no wave period, right, of post-punk New York. I just love that. Kind of hard to find. So luckily there's a great record shop here in the city called the Downtown Music Gallery. And it's an amazing noise section. So I love finally be able to see that now that I live here. I can go see.
Absolutely.
I like it. Yeah.
I thought it you know, complemented the work phenomenally. I thought it was really well put together between the music and those sounds. They still like blend together. It's not any kind of jarring.
Do you like yourself like noise and feedback music and ambient music?
I really like experimental stuff, which is why I was a big fan of this album, because it is not typical. You know, you're not really pretending to be anything you're not here with this album. It really is just, I guess, very natural because of the whole dream of consciousness writing. But yeah, it's very open and it's very bold, which I enjoy.
You're making me think about one of the counterintuitive or ironic things about experimental music and electronic noise. While it could only exist in our life and time as we know it in the modern times, I still think there's something very ancient about the pace of a lot of experiment. And I feel like that platform creates a space where, for instance, in that song called Snow Clouds, I was thinking a lot about how, and we know that the big mountains are actually the babies and the smaller mountains are the old ones. And in that snow cloud and painting, they almost have a rolling ancient. So I thought that bringing noise and feedback music elements into it, for some reason, sets it in a more ancient space. For me.
Yeah, and I suppose that, I guess that ancient feeling is just, it's very human, right? So
I love it.
I know, it was phenomenal. That's why I'm just such a big fan of this album. You got it right on the head,
I mean, I love musicians that imbibe that spirit. It's subjective, but I feel like if you're familiar with any of the, they call the American Quartet of Keith Jarrett in the 70s, I feel like they could really, as acoustic improvisers, get to some places where they almost sounded like cave paintings. And when musicians can get that primitive while listening to each other, I love music that does. Or same, I guess Arbor Park music, yeah, that has some of those qualities too. There's so much space in it, but there's something that's timeless about it too. I'm kind of rambling about it, but I'm just thinking out loud.
No, that's great. And that's a great way of putting it, I think, is to say cave painting kind of vibe. It might be even in some terms a bit crude, but it's just so natural. It's just so almost default, you could say, because it's untouched by so many other influences. We'll go back, and you mentioned how all the paintings were by Canadian artists. One part of the album was for you to get closer to finding an answer to the question, what does it mean to be Canadian? So having completed this now, may I ask, what does it mean to be Canadian for you? What steps have you gotten to closer answering that question?
Well, one of the ways that the question posed itself in the first place is when I moved away from the country in 8 years since I've lived in Canada. So I've had the great fortune to look at it with a different set of eyes. I guess I could be guilty of taking it for granted when we lived there, especially when you move to a to the United States, and it's just the structure in so many ways of the country is different. Although, as we know, there's so many similarities between the two countries. To be right. the observer of my native country was something I didn't really expect to be experiencing. It could be summed up also in a healthy dose of homesickness. and I was inspired by these artists, the Group of Seven and Tom Thompson and Emily Carr, because their dedication to documenting Canada, almost a blend of painter / expeditionist, really amazing. And you've seen some of the pictures. There's a famous picture of Lauren Harris, who's a painter of on the album. And there's a great picture of him hiking up the Rockies with a team in tow, going to find the perfect spot to paint. And I love how these guys leaned into that idea of, you know, put the mirror to ourselves and literally, like Tom Thompson, go into the bush not to be seen for months mm-hmm. and months and really document the land in such a unique voice. And all of the painters really, I think it's, I'm still like kind of tripping on it. The fact yeah. that they can, yeah. that they could explore these impressionistic techniques or tendencies, but then also celebrate the beauty and the power and the ancient qualities of Canada. And I know it's not, it's a small part of Canadian art, but mm-hmm. as someone who's constantly trying to change, you know, in my own work and like re-examine what I'm doing, I think it's a pretty remarkable feat that they all set out to do. Like so hip. Even today, like what a hip idea. Pretty amazing that this is what they dedicated their lives to. I mean, God, putting themselves really in harm's way. I mean, we're talking about, you know, hiking the Rockies 100 years ago to paint. Like it's a wild idea on paper. And they did it over and over again. I think some of them made it to the Arctic too.
It really is. If you do get the chance, I mean, obviously you have, but for any of the listeners, get the chance to read up on them. They, because like you said, 100 years ago, there wasn't all these paved roads. You couldn't go across Canada like you can now. So this was truly raw backpacking. It's funny because we did a road trip across part of the country this summer and we drove by Lake Huron. And they have a lot of stops just the side of the road. They'll have like little plaques about the Group of Seven was here, and they might show a picture that's based on that spot. And I can't remember which one, but one of them in the group was like notoriously very bad at being a wildernessman.
Interesting.
But they still did it, and you know, their canoes and whatnot, they really did. And I think even like you said, you know, they're not all of Canadian art, but they're definitely a big part of that. And I think it's because that they can provoke such inspiration, like in yourself, just their works continue to be very, very modern.
Yeah. And so many lessons to that instinct or that voice and develop it. I mean, such a grand scope and to get organized like that. And I haven't stopped studying them just since this record is done. If anything, I just marvel at the vision and the organizing of it and almost birthing this modern canon of Canadian art.
And I think in many ways, you know, listening to your album, it kind of provokes, at least for me, that same feeling. I'm, you know, you are painting these pictures with music. And I think that's kind of another reason why the field recordings add to that immersiveness, because it really puts you somewhere when you have that environment.
I wish this weren't true, but I have to be in the same room as the painting for this to work. And it would have been a lot cheaper if I didn't have to be. But I, you know, from Vancouver to Quebec City, those are the paintings I visited with and all the museums in person. And the reason I mention that is because I feel like there's something about sharing, this sound very esoteric, but I feel like there's something about sharing the space. And I know that the air is not vibrating with sound, but I know it is with light. And I haven't really, like I said, I can only explain it. It feels like I'm playing with an ensemble or another musician in the room.
That's really interesting. I'm glad you were able to find that too. That's such a unique take, just doing what you do, I guess.
Yeah, me too. I'm really grateful.
And you mentioned there you visited a few different art galleries across the country. Was there one that was your favorite? Was there one that stuck out the most?
Well, they're all so special in different ways. But right now, so I think for institutions, and then I could talk about individual works. But I mean, what the Quebec City Museum of Fine Arts is a really innovative building for how they move a guest through an exhibit. There's a lot of thought put in. I feel like it's a little more innovative the way that they mount a show there. And so that was kind of surprising to me. The flow seemed a little more risky and hip. And I don't know enough about curation and museum to actually use the proper terminology, but I just remember moving through that space being surprised a lot. Like, oh, there's this, and there's a lot of mixture of eras. And it was really cool. So that stands out for curation and exhibit design.
Okay.
But I guess the National Gallery in Canada, in Ottawa, is really, like, they have so many showstoppers. You see North Shore Lake Superior. It's really, like, almost like walking around the corner at the MoMA and seeing Starry Night by Van Gogh. And it stops you right in your tracks. Very arresting. And then, of course, you peek around the corner, and there's the Jack Pine by Tom Thompson. And I feel like these paintings, it's hard to be objective about it, but I feel like every time you see them, it's like you're seeing them for the first time, because they're the mixture of, like, strengths of voice and vision mixed with experimentation and drive to always be growing as an artist really is, like, transportive personally.
I feel like what I'm getting from you in this interview is that you're a very experiential guy. You really like that experience part of, I guess, just life. And that's so cool that an art gallery would be able to do that. I think you sold me on kind of both of them there, but just the Quebec one too, about going through in a certain way that makes it very exciting.
Yeah, they have a new building that I'm not sure where they are in completion, but it's dedicated to the works of Jean-Paul Riopel. And if you care to Google it, it's like unbelievable structure and incredible architectural feat that they're adding on to the already really beautiful, like, kind of mixed architecture already. There's, like, an older building, and then they've added on newer wings. And
oh, excited.
It's a really hip. Yeah. As was that one I was talking about at the beginning in Buffalo. I mean, that museum is really something, the Albright Knox.
I guess that's given you a reason to go back.
Oh, I can't wait. Yeah. I definitely would hop in the car and go to Buffalo just to go to that museum.
Rich and Symbols 3 will be waiting.
Yeah, Buffalo.
They find art in the places you least expect.
Someone asked me the other day if I were to do a third one, what would I do? And I thought, I think I might even try to keep going back and maybe having a dialogue with Indigenous artists. Like, what is it like to grow up with art being part of your culture, so closely linked to the history of your culture? And that's something I think, unless you and I grew up in radically different circumstances, I feel like art has been something that's a little more externalized or learned, and going to university and in communities there where there's a tradition of folk art. Like, how has history changed, and how does it influence your voice as an artist working with a form that's much, thousands of years of history before it?
Well, that sounds exciting. I hope you do get to do that, and I'd love to hear the result. Well, Chet, I do thank you. Unfortunately, really unfortunately, because I have very much enjoyed talking to you today, that's all our time. So I do thank you very much for joining me. Where can people find you and Rich in Symbols 2?
Well, I have a website, which is myname.com, so chetdoxis.com. On that site, you can listen to all the music you want to. And the album is out on Just In Time Records, and they have a website, and they also have a Bandcamp page. And I have Bandcamp, which I love. Bandcamp is spreading among many people because I think it's such a great platform for artists and listeners alike. So,
thank you once again so much
thank
for joining.
Johnny. Thank it you was... for your interest. Nice to talk with you.
It is a pleasure to chat with you as well. I wish you all the best, and I'll be waiting for that Rich in Symbols 3.
Likewise. Thanks, Johnny.
Thank you.
Indie 115, this is the Johnny Athens Variety Hour, and you just heard Chet Doxis there. He joined us on today's program. So much fun. I thank him so much for joining us, and I encourage you to go check out his stuff. He has his website, chetdoxis.com, and of course you can find him on Bandcamp, Spotify, Apple Music, wherever you get your music from. His new album, Rich in Symbols. That was followed by Avishai Cohen with part 3 of The Naked Truth, and lastly we had Way North, the Way North group, with this is a big one. If Charlie Hayden couldn't write a song to bring world peace, what are my chances? Or what chances do I have? Sorry. You kind of just come to sum it up a little bit. We also highlighted the Harry Bartlett Trio at the beginning of the hour, because they have a new release, a new album called Wildwood. You can find him at harrybartlettmusic.com, as well as all Bandcamp, SoundCloud, all the usual places as well. But before we go, we have one more new release to tell you about, the So Long 7, a brand new album by Only Elephants Know Her Name, featuring Neil Hendry, Tim Poskate, William Lamoureux, Ravi Nampally, and featuring many other great artists. It's a delicious mix of jazz, classical, blues, folk, and so much more from all around the world. It's a fresh sound. I'm excited to close out this week's show with them. They also have a website. Everyone has a website now, solong7.com. So you can check them out there, and of course all the usual spots as well. We will be playing a new track from this album. Well, it's a new album, of course, called Ghost Ocean. The group is a talented bunch of people performing an exceptional amount of music, and it's very fun. It's fresh. It's not a huge album. 8 tracks. They're all, the longest one is 6 minutes 42 seconds, which is kind of nice. I notice a lot of the new stuff can be rather fun and experimental and long as a result, but this one is nice, more contemporary in that form, and it's a lot of fun. It's a recording. Chet Doxis mentioned how he wants his next work to maybe be inspired by indigenous art. Well, this album is inspired in part by indigenous art, especially from Kenujak Ashavak, a very famous modernist indigenous painter. But it's also inspired by elephants, stars, and frogs, and nature. I thank you so much for tuning in to the Johnny Athens Variety Hour. I hope you've enjoyed it as much as I have. And we will see you next week on Indie 1015. Take care and good night.
You're listening to CIOI. Indy 101.5, Hamilton's home for alternative.